Requiem of the Outcast 27 for January 2006.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. We know you're out there. Rejects from society, artists, writers, poets, filmmakers. Get off the couch. Make something. The world is waiting to hear your voice. And so are we. We are the Requiem of the Outcast. Are you an outcast?
Hello everyone, my name is Rich Siegfried. I'm an illustrator for money, but I do multimedia for a living.
And I am Earl Newton. I am a radio producer in my real life. And in my fake life, I also do radio.
And you are listening to Requiem of the Outcast, as featured in two separate pages of Podcasting for Dummies. That's right, we're legit now. No, not really.
Brought to you by the Internet. The Internet, a suitable girlfriend substitute since 1997.
Yes, of course. Welcome to Requiem of the Outcast, ladies and gentlemen. This is our 27th episode. We've been around for quite a while, and we appreciate you tuning in and listening. We know there are a lot of podcasts out there, and the fact that you chose us for your listening time means a lot to us, and we appreciate it. This month, we're going to do a lot of voice acting, so all kinds of voice acting and voice characterization information. We've got an interview with Scott Sigler from Earthcore.
And a review of Earthcore as well.
Absolutely. We also have a how-to on voice characterization, thanks to Jeffrey Breslauer, professional voice actor, as well as Dramatis Imitation Theater.
And plus, we'll give you a great update on all the kinds of great stuff coming from Outcast Multimedia and the various sundries around it.
Mr. Earl, how are you doing this month? This, of course, being January, if we're recording this in the December
Live
month.
The lie. Live the lie.
Through the magic of the interweb.
That's right. This podcast was uncovered a week ago, and we decided to release it January 1st.
That's right. We're speaking from the past.
This is a time capsule from the recent past. How are things in the future? Do you have flying cars yet? How about now?
How about now?
Or now?
How about now?
Damn it. All right, well.
Curses. Technology does not move as fluidly as we'd hoped.
Every single month I pray that by the time the episode is released we'll have flying cars, and every single month I have to put my helmet back in the closet.
I know. One day you'll be able to
wear it. Yeah, I wear it now, just not very proudly. Anyway, I've been doing great. This last month has been insane, of course, getting Sins of the Mother ready to go, which it should be out by next episode. Next episode, it should be completely done. So we could do a lot of shameless self-promotion there. How about you, Rich? What have you been doing?
Well, I have been preparing quite a few scripts for the Mr. Adventure series, which is available at pulpadventures.net.
All right.
We finally have a URL for that. Also, I've been working on some scripts for Moment of Serenity. We've already got one working script for that audio series, as well as, well, we'll talk about some of the other stuff that's coming up later on from Outcast Multimedia. This month's roundtable discussion: are face actors taking jobs away from voice actors? Voice actors would be talented folks such as Tom Kenny, Rob Paulson, and of course, nowadays, Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
People that you will see on all sorts of either cartoons or doing voiceovers on television shows. A lot of CG movies nowadays, which of course are starting to show off a lot of face actors, i.e. Shrek with Mike Myers, got Shark Tale with the 5 million face actors that are in there.
Yeah. An all-star cast, and you never see one of them.
Exactly. Now, really, the main focus on this is, are they these very talented voice actors who have made such a career off of the characterization, not only the characterizations, but also the types of voices that they can do, are they being replaced with actors that are basically being purchased because of one single voice?
Yeah, Brad Pitt gets hired because he can do an amazing impression of Brad Pitt.
Exactly. He's got a lot of experience, you know.
I'll tell you, I think it's so fantastic that we picked this subject to discuss this month, because I am uniquely prepared to discuss this. When I was a very small child, I was an incredibly intense Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fan, and I still remember going to my mother one day and going, "Mom, they're such good actors." Now, of course, I just meant the turtles. I didn't know that there were, like, voices, but, you know, I was still worried about poor performance, and it still applies.
Well, I was the same way when they pulled the Darren switch with, I think it was either Michelangelo or Raphael, where they actually changed the voice actor, and there was such an audible difference in the sound of the character. And, you know, you face that with quite a few characters over the years. Not only do the voice actors die, but sometimes, you know, they come back with a new version of the show, especially with the retro craze right now, where you're getting people that sound very similar. I think a perfect example right now is Transformers. You have the original cartoon, very distinct voices. People know those voices.
Yeah. Then, I mean, they're almost like a part of your childhood.
Exactly. Then this, you know, the revamp of the cartoon, the CG shows, and of course now the upcoming live action movie, where you have quite a few, you know, different voices.
I think there's potential for that because there is no face notoriety. And, I mean, in our society, you don't really have a lot of people famous for being able to look like other people. I mean, you have lookalikes, but they don't really get a career out of it. Whereas, on the other hand, if you sound like, well, I mean, perfect example. I mean, there are comedians that have made a living off of sounding like Al Pacino. If you can do hoo-ha, you know, there's someone who will write a check for that.
Hoo-ah!
Exactly. Listen, except not for that.
No.
But the idea is that it almost devalues someone who lives totally on their voice.
Absolutely. And I think that with the, you know, the latest craze being getting all of these face actors, not only does it take jobs, you know, from the voice actors, but it greatly devalues their worth. Already they get paid far less than, you know, what a big name face actor, even though they work harder, because sometimes they'll have upwards of 10 characters per episode in a 30-minute cartoon, which is only about, say, 20 minutes of actual action. They're playing, you know, almost half as many characters as there are minutes in the episode, and they're not getting the kind of notoriety. They're certainly not getting paid the same amount. I think that with Shark Tale is a really good example, because you've got Will Smith, Jack Black, Renee Zellweger, you've got Robert De Niro. You've got a lot of actors that are known. They are absolutely known for the types of characters that they play. They're very recognizable. You see them, you know who they are. You hear their voice, you pretty much can accept what kind of character they're going to do. And they did play up that quite a bit with Robert De Niro and being a mobster. So you've got this gangster with Robert De Niro, but the problem is that each of these characters are exactly what you would expect from the actors. Will Smith is a hip-hop kind of, he's a homeboy fish. You know, Renee Zellweger is the hopelessly in love but completely overlooked. I mean, it's a form of typecasting. But instead of paying for their image, you're just paying for their voice. But you're only getting one particular type of voice. Now, I do have to hand it to Jack Black in this particular movie, because his character is the only one that doesn't really sound like him.
That's kind of where I was going to go with the whole thing, which is that you're hiring people who are known for their face. They don't really bring, I mean, granted, Will Smith is great, but he doesn't bring a lot in the way of
characterization.
Exactly. If you look at Brad Bird's comments on why he chose the people he did for The Incredibles, I mean, he picked people whose voices carried a character.
And I think Pixar really does it right, because we look at Monsters, Inc. You've got, yes, you have Billy Crystal, but it's really not Billy Crystal in there. You've got kind of a goofy character. Now, he didn't go to the extent of, say, a Robin Williams, where he completely changed who it was, where it's you can only tell if, you know, he's doing his somewhat normal voice, and you can tell by the manicness of the character. But with Billy Crystal, you know it's him, but you don't hear Billy Crystal. You hear Mike Wazowski. Whereas with John Goodman, it's a little bit different, but he fit the look of the character. He really fit the character itself. So it still falls into that you've hired a face actor for whatever. And a lot of the directors, especially with Pixar, they oftentimes will go through the voices. You know, they'll have, of course, the storyboard guys or the sound guys laying down temporary voice tracks, mm-hmm. and sometimes those characters end up staying in the film. Brad Bird was Roz in Monsters, Inc. I think it was... No, Brad Bird did The Incredibles.
Yeah, Brad Bird was
The
Incredibles.
He did the voice for Edna in The Incredibles.
Yeah.
The director of Monsters, Inc. did Roz. I'm thinking it's Doctor, but I could be wrong. Or maybe it's Lasseter, whoever directed Monsters, Inc. And mm-hmm. if you kind of progress down, I mean, granted, the first major CGI flick, of course, from Pixar... was Toy Story, where it had a lot of face actors. You had Tom Hanks, you had Tim Allen, you've got Don Rickles, John Ratzenberger, who of course is like the king of Pixar voice work. He's in Cliff Clavin is in every single Pixar movie doing
but
at least
But if you think about it, all those guys are known for playing great characters. I mean, you've got Tim Allen, mm-hmm. who made his bones playing this sort of Uberman. You've got Tom Hanks, who made his bones playing the stereotypical sort of neurotic everyman. You know, I think to people like Brad Pitt in Sinbad, Brad Pitt made his bones having abs. It doesn't really translate.
Well, now,
you know, I mean, his voice doesn't carry how tight his six-pack is. You know, I mean, it's just not...
That's true. And Brad Pitt, I mean, I was watching I Love the 90s Part Deux today, and they were talking about Seven, and Brad Pitt is a hell of an actor. I mean, just watch
sure.
12 Monkeys. But he isn't able to really create characters. Oftentimes, it's the same character. Granted, it might be from a different angle. There might be a lot of depth to it. But he doesn't have a whole lot of range in his voice. You hear
right.
Brad Pitt, you know it's Brad Pitt. It's always going to be Brad Pitt. And I think this is a great shame, because oftentimes with women also, you don't hear a lot of... most female voice actors don't really do a whole lot of characters. Just through my own observations, and I'm probably wrong about this, but I haven't really seen a whole lot of range when it comes to women. You get some people, such as Tara Strong, Debbie Derryberry, who are phenomenal actresses. That, you know, they do, you know, Timmy Turner from Fairly Odd Parents. You've also got Jimmy Neutron. But then you've also, you know, they also do Raven. You know, they do a lot of female characters.
One that definitely gets overlooked a lot is the very fine lady who does, or who did, she died, but who did 90% of the voices on South Park, Mary Kay Bergman.
She died?
Yeah, I believe she was credited as Shannon Cassidy, though. I'm not sure of that. But she did die. She died in 1999.
I didn't know.
And they switched with a new...
That explains why there was a drop-off on a lot of their major female characters.
They did, and it was they had to bring somebody else in to do it. But originally, okay, here's a perfect example. Okay, they have three different women now. It looks like four different women, as I understand it, taking care of the characters that Mary Kay Bergman did. She was Principal Victoria, Leanne Cartman, Sharon Marsh. She did all the moms. She was the nurse. She was Wendy Testerberger. I mean, she literally, you have to understand, Trey Parker and Matt Stone did a large number of voices. She did everything they didn't do. I think you're right, but it's almost like she was the female Mel Blanc. You know, she had this wide variety of people. I mean, sure, you could kind of tell it was her in some of them, but nonetheless, she did have that one little niche. Now, how many more are out there? You're exactly right, not many.
And
you know, and now my question to you is that because that women are not capable of it, or is it not encouraged?
I don't know. From what I've been able to tell, I mean, guys, we can go high, we can go low, and you can sometimes get a guy who sounds like a female. But it's tough to make a female really sound like a guy unless they're trying to do an impression of China from the WWE. I do have to add one more female name. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, there are other very talented women. But you also don't hear a lot of female impressionists. And I think it's because, for one reason or another, I think females, diaphragm, voice box, all of the stuff there, has a tough time formulating some of these sounds. The only other woman that I've ever seen that has really made a job for it, and maybe it's just that, you're right, there's no supply for it, or there's no demand for it, so there's no supply. But there is a stand-up comedian who is featured on the Comedians of Comedy, which I love the title of that show.
Comedians of Comedy?
Yes. It's it is Zach Galifianakis, who I am a huge fan of, Patton Oswalt, Brian Posehn, and, of course, Maria Bamford. In her stand-up act, she probably has at least 20 different female characters that she uses, and those are just the ones that she uses in her stand-up. These aren't impressions. It's just that when she tells stories, she'll start to do the voices of the characters. And
wow.
We're talking everything from, you know, a sweet little girl to definitely what would be her stage voice, which is a character in and of itself, to the, you know, worn out road agent, you know, somebody who's just, you know, has just been worked over by life, and you can just tell it in the voice. And she hasn't done a whole lot of voice acting, just Charlotte's Web 2, and she's done some stuff in video games like Escape from Monkey Island. But she and
who
and
was she in Escape from Monkey Island?
Brittany the Bank Teller.
Really?
She also played Shriek Dubois in Cat Dog. But
I don't know about Cat Dog, but I am an enormous fan of the Monkey Island series, and I actually know exactly who you're talking about. I can't believe that.
But I'm just surprised that she hasn't done more and more and more and more and more voice work, because she is amazingly talented in
it. So to the topic, yeah, are voice actors being replaced by face actors? I think yes, temporarily. I think they have been in the past, and there will be phases where they will be again, but to be honest with you, no. And the simple reason is the fact that face actors become famous because of their face or because of their physical ability. Voice actors are there because of their ability to manipulate and perform with their voice. Hollywood will only pay for what it has to pay for, and in the end, they know they have to pay for voice actors because they're the only ones that can deliver.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So that's what I say.
I say that I think that quite a few jobs are going to face actors, and I think that that is hurting the industry to an extent where people are not expecting as much. And I think that a great value is... Mm. I think that a lot of these voice actors are being devalued in their position. Whenever you hear an interview with guys like Rob Paulsen, Tom Kenny, Maurice LaMarche, they will tell you that when they go in, most of these face actors, they'll see the kind of work that the voice actors do, and they are absolutely blown away, where they will sit there and go through 15 characters and all in one day, no problem, boom, you know, do phenomenal acting, do enough change in the voices that nobody knows, you know, that it's the same guy unless you have a trained ear, and they're just blown away. And I think that there are only two that I can think of major crossover stars in between those two fields. One of them, of course, being Robin Williams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just kind of been his bit in his stand-up act all throughout the years. He's always done voices and impressions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Jim Carrey would be phenomenal. And just as a side, Jim Carrey would be phenomenal in this if he, you know, ever gets horribly mangled or something. And
do you think so?
Anymore.
I don't think Jim Carrey would make a very good voice actor at all.
Listen to him singing "You're a Mean One, Mr. Grinch."
Well, all right, I'll give you that.
And there's at least 17 different voices in there, and that's singing, let alone what just the voices that he can do. Take a look at, you know, in Living Color. But the other person that has really done an amazing job crossing over is Mark Hamill. He's really taking a bold step out by trying to promote the voice actors.
Voice actors being devalued. Jess Harnell, of course, who is known for, good Lord.
Oh, yeah.
So many. I mean, if you look at his IMDb list, it has well over 70, 80, 90. I haven't even gone down to the bottom. There's just an inordinate number of voices that he does. One of the ones, of course, he's known for is the Animaniacs. And he's actually done Darth Maul a number of times. There's all kinds of things he's done. The point of the whole thing is he said that when you're doing this, just because you're a name doesn't mean anything. In fact, he had gone in for an audition one time, and they said, what we're looking for is a Jess Harnell type. And he went in and auditioned, and the part went to somebody else. So, I mean, I feel like that's one definitely negative aspect of being a voice actor, is that you are devalued, and you are just because you make a big name for yourself, unless you are Mel Blanc. And I will say one other thing, though, in response to it. While it is true that that they are devalued in that sense, and I think you're exactly right. This whole topic you brought up is exactly right. On the other hand, they have one benefit that voice actors never have, or face actors never have.
What's that?
Shelf life.
True.
A voice actor, as long as his voice is okay, can work for 30 years and play the same character. Whereas, I mean, how long does Brad Pitt really have, guys? You know, the abs are only going to last so long.
Mrs. Parker, I know that you're lonely, and I know, Mrs. Parker, I don't want to be the one that lets you down.
In this time of world trepidation, humanity needs a hero. In fact, we need a superhero. And only one man can bring Commander Courage to the big screen.
Hey, this might be a place you can get a t-shirt.
Comic Book the Movie.
There's a lot of stuff blow up in it. I love movies with stuff blowing up.
Mark Hamill is Donald Swan, a man on a mission.
Pearl Harbor, I just love that movie. But I thought, can you imagine if Ben Affleck was able to fly up, break the planes in half, and dump the Japanese into the ocean?
Comic Book the Movie on DVD for comic book lovers everywhere.
Comic Book the Movie was written and directed, well, written is loosely, since it was mostly improv, but it was written and directed by Mark Hamill, and it features just a bevy of voice actors. Billy West, who, of course, was Ren and Stimpy and is the go-to guy for Looney Tunes characters nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Jess Harnell, who played Wacko from The Animaniacs. Lori Allen from SpongeBob, Tom Kenny, who is SpongeBob, as well as 500 other characters on SpongeBob.
You know, I actually met all these guys.
Really? At Comic-Con?
I met them all at Comic-Con in 2004.
Was that the one where they filmed? Or no,
that was the one where they came back the next year to show it, and they actually, I was there at the sort of promotional thing for it.
Now, the plot of Comic Book the Movie features Don Swan, played by Mark Hamill, who is the biggest fan of Commander Courage. Now, they happen to be making a movie about Commander Courage, and they're kind of changing it just a little bit. They're updating it a little bit. So instead of him fighting side by side with his nephew Liberty Lad, now he's fighting next to the sexy vixen Liberty Lass, thankfully played by Donna DeErica. Now, obviously, him being a super fan, he launches a campaign to try to stop the creation of this new updated version of the movie. Mm-hmm. And he makes a documentary, which, of course, is what you end up watching. And I tell you, the movie itself is hilarious. It's got all of these great voice actors, which I was watching, and I was just picking the guys out because I'm such a huge fan of voice actors, and I respect them so greatly. And it's full of, it's full of a lot of in moments, but most of them, most geeks will know. One of my favorite ones is when he runs by a table, he's exhausted, he asks if he can sit down, and one man says, "There's no room for you here." Another man says, "You'd best move on, son." And the other one kind of stretches and goes, "Argh." Those, of course, being played by Jeremy Bullock, Boba Fett, David Prowse, Darth Vader, and Peter Mayhew, Chewbacca.
Oh my God.
So there are quite a few moments like that, and then, of course, there's some of the ones that I know I will invariably come across, where Tom Kenny sits with his son and his wife at Comic-Con, and his wife says, "Honey, would you like to play with your new toy?" to their four-year-old son, in which case he turns and looks at mom and says, "No, you can't open that. That's a collectible." So, and I've already started training my children wisely. Comic Book the Movie may be difficult to find in stores. I've only been able to find it at Circuit City or Best Buy. However, of course, you can go online to comicbookthemovie.com, where I believe they're running a special, possibly $15 and a free lithograph that comes with it, which is a hell of a deal for a feature-length film. One of the best parts about this comes on the second disc. It's a bonus. It is the Comic-Con panel featuring all of these voice actors, where while they were shooting one scene, everybody who was not busy on the movie shoot went to this panel, and it's moderated by Roger Ramjet, and of course they've got Pinky, the Brain, SpongeBob, so many characters, Jim Cummings, the go-to guy for Disney. Oh my God, if I could do a Winnie the Pooh impression, I'd be happy for life. And of course, that website again is www.comicbookthemovie.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Requiem of the Outcast. I am Earl Newton, and with me always is
Rich Siegfried.
Guys, today we are interviewing Scott Sigler. If you don't know who Scott Sigler is, you probably have not been spending much time on the internet, and actually, that could be a good thing. But the point is, Scott Sigler is the author of Earthcore. He's also the author of Ancestor. We'll get to that in a little bit. Scott, hello and welcome to Requiem of the Outcast.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Scott, we're going to ask you a bunch of different questions covering a lot of different topics because, really, if you think about Earthcore, you're operating as both an author, a performer, mm-hmm. a promoter, mm-hmm. and just a general producer, director, creating the entire environment of the novel. So if you don't mind, we're going to just jump right in, okay?
Go right ahead.
All right. First of all, Scott, what turned you on to the idea of podcasting your own novel?
When I first came across podcasting back in March, I had started a job with a new company that does a lot of executive communications, and they do a thing called talk radio, so that they have basically a Larry King Live, but with a VP of sales or a CEO as the host, and they pre-interview everybody, and they write a script, and it's a real smooth operation, and it makes the CEO and VP sound great, and it's a great way to communicate information. They've been doing that for about 10 years, and they put out MP3s, so I was looking around for something else to do with the MP3s to promote the company better, stumbled across podcasting, and I immediately connected it with serialized fiction, you know, a la 30s and the 40s and back in the glory days of radio. And being a novelist, I went out looking for podcast novel. I went to Google and searched for that, and surprisingly, I couldn't find anything at all, and I kept trying different permutations of that name, assuming that someone had done this because it seemed so obvious to me as a great way to deliver an audiobook. And as soon as I realized that the reason it wasn't coming up on Google is because no one had done it, like, oh my goodness, I have an opportunity to be first to market with a whole new idea. And I gave myself a crash course in podcasting, and not being a very technical person, that was pretty rough, but managed to get the first episode of Earthcore up in March of 2005, and has been rolling ever since.
Something I'm always big on in movies or in podcasting is the music. Mm-hmm. And I really kind of felt like you did excellently well with just a little bit of music that you had. Now, I have to ask you, the transfer, did you already know them?
Yeah, I was actually in that band. I was making this, and, you know, I know enough about the basics of music rights, so I just couldn't put anything in there. And this was even before the whole concept of PodSafe Music Network, at least before I was aware of it. And my old band had finished a CD, and the music was perfect for the context of the book and the content of the book. So I just started using that, and it turned out to be a big boost for them as well, because they got about another 10,000 people hearing their music. So everybody was happy.
Yeah, because I got to say, when I first started listening to the first episode, I'm like, wait a second, is this a audio book or is this a rock concert? What the heck?
I'm getting categorized as a heavy metal author now, so that's kind of interesting.
That intro is so perfect. I remember I've listened to a lot of podcasts, and usually, you know, you hear this, something like that, and then they go, and when I heard that music kick up and it went, you're listening to Earthcore, I went, oh, damn.
Yeah.
It automatically sets up a very cinematic feel to it, you know, almost like a larger than some guy in front of his computer with a microphone.
Well, and I knew that opportunity was there when I started doing it. I'm very confident in the work itself, and I think the story is extremely strong, the characters are strong, and I've got a pretty good idea of how to pace out the story to keep you turning the page. Mm-hmm. So I felt that I had something solid, and I wasn't going to go into this timidly, like, oh gosh, here's my book, I hope you like it. I mean, I thought I had a knockout, and I wanted to come up with a dramatic intro to it. And the other thing is, with a marketing background, it's like I wanted to catch people's attention right off the bat, and I didn't want the plinky music or something light. Fortunately, that song Down With Everything by The Transfer really comes up with a big guitar swell, and it's very bombastic and over the top.
Did you have any difficulty in taking the pacing of a novel, which you'd probably agree, you have much more time to develop mm-hmm. things than you would in an audio drama. So did you have any difficulty, or did you ever feel like you wanted to change anything or tweak anything in the reading of the novel when you sat down to record it?
Well, there's some fundamental things that had to change because I opted to do all the different character voices instead of just reading it straight as a narrator. So a lot of the he says and she says and some of the facial expressions, things that you would normally read and have no problem with, some of that just had to go to make it sound okay when you read it. But as far as the pacing, I was very true to that book. Fortunately, Earthcore starts off with a pretty big bang, and get you wondering just what the heck is going on underneath that mountain in Utah. But I stayed with it. I actually did cut out a few parts because I was getting that feeling too. In the print version, I think you can take your time, you can do your thing, and everything's fine. When you get into the podcast version, you have to keep the audience moving along. It's a lot like a TV show. Like, I'm a big fan of Lost, and I was a big fan of Surface, but in the storytelling of Surface, which is the same concept as Lost, it's that weekly episodic cliffhanger type thing, you go through a couple episodes where nothing really happens, and I just totally fell off and lost track of the story. So with a patio book like Earthcore, it's the similar concept. You got to keep giving the audience something that keeps them interested in the upcoming episode. Pretty much each episode is a commercial to sell the next episode.
Right. Now, of course, you mentioned your acting just a moment ago. Did you have any voice acting or like performance training, perhaps theater growing up, to prepare you for this?
Not really. In high school, in the plays, I was the comedic relief. You know, I would do the character acting bits, but my buddies and I, going all the way back to grade school, have always been big on doing a bunch of different voices and different characters, just joking around type things, and that's about the only training. What I found interesting about that is I'm pretty good at a lot of different accents, but when you're doing 4 and 5 accents at one time, you tend to jumble them all up, and it's amazing how fast that you lose the ability to do that. So not a lot of training there. I just kind of worked my way through it and trying to find a voice that would fit each character.
When you recorded these, did you read it straight through and do the voices in a very linear progression, or did you kind of record a bass track and then possibly do one character at a time, record all those lines, put them together, or would you even suggest something like that to avoid jumbling accents or anything like that?
That'd be a great idea. I mean, I don't have that kind of project management expertise with the software. And that's what it really came down to, is I've gotten a lot of comments. You know, I get bagged on particularly for my female voices because there's only so many female voices that I come up with to make them sound different.
Wait, I had to stop you right there, actually, because when you first did Kayla Myers, I actually had to commend you on your performance of that voice, because especially now saying you've never had any training, I have had a lot of theater training. I've done a lot of different kind of theater kind of things. And one of the first things that guys who are untrained try to do is a really high voice like that, and you never did that. You just went to the higher register and let it sit, and I thought that was very smooth of you to do. But anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean
to interrupt you. And, you know, you'll notice in Ancestor, I do have one of those higher register voices, because I've run out of different voices to do. I didn't know what else to do.
Was that the character from Earthcore in Ancestor? Oh, no, it's a different character. You just got to use the same voices, right?
The real challenge with Ancestor has been coming up with all new voices.
Right.
Some of the voices are the same. And, you know, the readers are very unforgiving about that, too. I had a bit character in the first episode of Ancestor, and I got probably a couple hundred emails of people going, hold on a second, bro. That's the same voice you're using before. That's got to go. So the accessibility of the author with this kind of format, I get a lot of constructive feedback from the audience, that's for sure. And if they smell, you know, laziness or BS somewhere, they're quick to let me know, and I have to go fix it.
That was great, because I actually heard you add the quotes around constructive criticism right there.
It's been very interesting, because the other thing I'm doing that I don't think any author has done before, and this is thanks to the medium, is online accessibility that I have. I mean, right on the blog, I've got my AIM, my Skype, my Yahoo, my email. People ping me all day long, and they're usually quite surprised that they'll send me an IM, and I'll just IM them right back, and we'll start talking about the book. And I think that that's been wonderful for capturing fans, because now they feel a personal connection and they're much more interested in what's going on. But it also creates that sense of familiarity where, you know, that fourth wall is gone. If people think something's not working, they're very quick to let you know. Going back to your question of the production, you know, it's the logistical thing. If you've got the wherewithal to lay down those different tracks and put everything together, that's great. I highly recommend against it, because I still run into problems where there's little bits of audio that I didn't know were there. And whenever I go to a second track or a third track, I can run into trouble and wind up with a finished product that's got some stuff in there I didn't expect to hear. So I pretty much go through the whole thing. I just go through it in a linear fashion. It's mostly one track, and I'll stop and restart and re-record over things a lot. That's what takes the most time, is if I goof up any line, I just redo it again. But no, I don't do multiple tracks for each character, which might be something I have to get into down the road because of some of the cool voice modulation software that I've heard and seen demos of. You know, I can do a slightly different voice, and then with this other software, it won't even sound like me, but it still sounds natural. And that's really hard to pass up now from the performer side. I'm like, how can I not use this stuff? This is great. It's going to make the story so much better.
Would you be open to having other people help you out with some of these characters?
Yeah, definitely. And that's one of the big comments you get from the readers, but that brings you back again to the logistical side of things. There's not a lot of money involved in this right now, and it's produced on a weekly schedule. So if someone's going to commit to be that part, they've got to show up to record. It would be beyond me for them to record their parts and send it in. I mean, I don't have that kind of technical expertise to work that in. But it's a possibility.
All right, we're going to go into what we call the gauntlet.
Okay.
What we're going to do here is basically we're going to ask you questions as quickly as possible. All right?
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. First question is, will the body count in the sequel of EarthCore be higher?
Higher.
Amazon.com has reviews of EarthCore by people like Tom L. Samuel Beach who say, a great story, great characters. Are any of these your wife in disguise?
No.
Do you anticipate more established mainstream writers like Stephen King or Alan Dean Foster starting their own podcast?
Absolutely, and I can't believe they haven't done it yet.
Will any characters from EarthCore 1 be in EarthCore 2?
Yes.
Do you believe that great writers must undergo pain and suffering in order to become great?
Absolutely.
Do you find it at all ironic that you can currently write very graphic, fast-moving, violent novels and also live with dogs named Mookie and Emma?
Yeah, but you should see what they do to stuffed animals. That's where my inspiration comes from. They just dismember the thing.
So that leads into the next question. Do you think they may be part of the reason you write very graphic, violent, fast-moving novels?
The Monster and Ancestor is based on Emma.
Wow.
Is it better to write well or write frequently?
Frequently.
Pick one. Successful hack or impoverished genius?
Successful hack.
See, that's why we ask them.
Would you like to see your work turned into films?
Yes, and we're working on that right now.
Rock on.
Would you sign away the rights to your work to be made into a film? Would you sign them away?
No.
If someone were to play Scott Sigler in a movie, who would you cast?
Danny DeVito.
Wow. I have to take a moment for wow. What's your favorite book?
Gosh, my favorite book? That is a tough one. I'll have to go with Relic. I liked Relic.
Okay, one more I have to ask you. You said you've written screenplays. Do you look to pursuing a career in screenwriting as well?
Yeah, I'm pursuing novels, TV, movies, the whole nine yards.
And I'd like to hit you with the very last question for our gauntlet session. Were the rock-spitting guys from Legend of Zelda the genesis of the Rocktopi?
No, they were not. No, the genesis of the Rocktopi was the cavemen in 2001.
That's what he says, ladies and gentlemen, but remember, he has to say that for legal purposes. Scott Sigler, we appreciate your time so much today. It was a fantastic time, and we really look forward to Ancestor, which you can find at scottsigler.net. Is that right?
That is correct. EarthCore is moving over to patiobooks.com, mm-hmm. So that'll only be available at patiobooks.com. Will soon be available for purchase, the whole thing, on iTunes, and is available at amazon.com. And you can go to scottsigler.net to get access to all those and to get access to the free patio book, Ancestor.
Well, God willing, your site will not shut down from all the hits, because from what I've seen, it's a fantastic book. I'm right in the middle of it right now. And
great.
It has idled away many an hour for me driving back and forth from work to school and home and work again.
Perfect.
Scott, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, sir. Hello, this is Scott Sigler from EarthCore and Ancestor Podcast, and I am an outcast. I am a bloody, savage, bloodthirsty outcast, and listen to the damn show or it's going to be your ass.
Guys, you just heard an interview with Scott Sigler, the author and creator of EarthCore, the podcast. If you'd like to check out the full interview, check out our feed over at RequiemOfTheOutcast.com. We'll have the entire thing up for you to listen to all of the brilliant things that Scott Sigler has to say. You are listening to the review of the podcast, EarthCore.
Cool music.
We don't have the rights to.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the review of the podcast, EarthCore. If you just listened a few moments ago, that, of course, was Scott Sigler, who wrote EarthCore and also podcasted on the internet this year and did exceptionally well with it. Did he get up to 10,000 listeners? I know he had at least 5,500.
10,000 listeners upon immediate release of the final chapter of EarthCore.
Yeah, an inordinate number, and you'll notice I like to use the word inordinate, and it completely applies to EarthCore.
It was so inordinate, as a matter of fact, that they actually published the book. He got a publishing deal because of the popularity of his podcast.
Well, if you listen to, by the way, you should check this out, if you listen to The Survival Guide to Fantasy Writing by T. Morris, one of the things that he mentions is if you can sell 2,000 copies of your first book, that's considered a job well done. So if he has 10,000 listeners, that's pretty much a guaranteed sale. I mean, if I were a publisher, I would do that. I got into EarthCore from Rich, who got into Earth Core because he heard about it.
Well, actually, the funny thing is, I didn't really get into it. I didn't start listening until you told me that we were going to
interview. I know, that's what I mean. You had heard about it, and you told me about it, and I started to listen because I needed something to listen to on my drive up and back from work.
Which I think one of the reasons why I didn't listen to it until we were going to interview is because I'm somebody who absolutely hates hype. I am somebody who does not jump on many bandwagons. If everybody tells me that it's the coolest thing in the freaking world, I'm going to turn around and walk the opposite way, because so often things get overhyped or just it doesn't turn out the way that it should. And so for me, it was kind of like, okay, everybody's talking about this. But, you know, everybody's talking about a lot of podcasts that I think are garbage. But when I actually sat down to listen to Earth Core, I was blown freaking away. Now, I just finished it today, and Earl,
yeah, see, that's the
you're
thing,
still
is after
in
I got
it.
You into it, you got ahead of me.
Oh, dude, I blew through it in 2 days.
Oh, my God.
Well,
there's
23
episodes.
Days.
Is there enough time for that?
It was 2 or 3 8-hour work days, plus my drive to and from work. So that's about 45 minutes, so just enough for one extra chapter. Yeah, dude, I just could not, I couldn't put my MP3 player down. I had to listen to it. It was that good. Now, like I said, I finished it. You have not. What are your thoughts on as far as you've gotten?
My thoughts on it thus far. First of all, anyone who has not checked it out, it is worth your time. ScottSigler.net is the web address. Take a look at it. And I don't say this for some kind of hype. I say this because I'm not the kind of person that listens to anything regularly. I mean, I listen to T. Morris's podcast and Geek Fu Action Grip. There's a couple others that I definitely listen to. But for the most part, I just don't. I don't have time or the interest to listen to anything regularly because there's very little that can hold my attention. But I will tell you what, Earth Core holds my attention. The pacing on it is sharp. The plotting is fast. And not only that, but he creates characters and situations that you keep coming back to and thinking, wow. Like, the one that comes to mind right now, and I can say this because it's pretty early on in the book, is when Kirkland's wife dies.
Hmm.
Through a mix-up, I accidentally brought the wrong CD to work, so I ended up listening to that chapter twice. When he starts talking about the broken bones in her hands and all these, and you're just sitting there going, oh my good lord. I mean, sitting there, he really, and I think part of this is due to his performance as well, coming back to the voice acting, but he really carries you into this world, and you can't get out.
He does all of the voices, but he does voices. It's not just his voice, just reading through. He does all of the characters, and he does play them up. He also acts as he goes along. He doesn't just read lines of dialogue or words. He literally brings it to life. I would say that the only thing that was missing were sound effects, which, of course, you don't really need. He does give you just the details you need to keep the pace going, which is something that you mentioned with the pacing. It is just fluid, nonstop. You're always in. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's roller coaster where he brings you up, brings you down, but you're always moving. And, of course, he's releasing Ancestor right now via podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can find all of his projects at scottsigler.net. But, you know, one thing that I really want to say is that not only does he release the audio, but he also goes the extra mile with a little bit of kind of making the world real for you, and not just through his performances. At one point in time in Earth Core, the Earth Core business website is mentioned. And I just wondered, like, you know, he mentions it. I wonder if there's anything there. I mean, there couldn't really be anything there. And when I go there, wouldn't you know that there's a website on there that says, we'd like everyone to know that though we are the leading mining company, we'd also like to apologize for there is a book out there that supposedly has some tell-alls on some secrets, and we say that we distance ourselves from that book, and we realize that that is not true, and that is all fiction and everything. I mean, he builds it up as like it's something very legit, and I cannot wait to see what he does with Ancestor.
And what is that at web address in case they want to spy on Earth Core's website?
The business site is www.earthcore.biz.
Mm-hmm.
The website for Ancestor, which is truly one of the best-looking websites for any podcast I have ever seen, aside from a link from his website, scottsigler.net, you can also find it at project-daemon, daemon.net. Of course, all links will be in our show notes. Scott Sigler also has a great connection with his audience. everything from most of his promotion was via other podcasts talking about him, promoting him, playing his promos and whatnot. If he can help promote somebody else, he's willing to do that. The music that he has is so charged, and of course, as you heard in the interview, that was a band that he used to play for, and so if he can give them a plug, he does it. And of course, with Ancestor, he's got another band, and he plugs the crap out of them, too. And it's just as rock and just as fast-paced, but this time it's a little bit more of a creature story. As you heard in the interview, there is coming an Earthcore 2. The first Earthcore took him about 2.5 years. He's hoping that the second Earthcore book will take about 6 months to write.
I'll tell you, just from doing the interview with Scott, something that really struck me, and I think that anyone who's working in independent media might want to take this away. Scott comes out guns blazing. He does not hold back. And I think part of that, it's a strong level of confidence, obviously, and everybody needs to have that, especially when you're promoting your work. But something that he just brings to the table is the knowledge that what he is bringing to you is worth your time. And I think that's not just from idle egotism, but you could tell by just from the interview the way he puts so much labor into the books, the way he goes over them and over them and over them. By the time he's done with the book, he knows it's good because he's had to work that hard for it. And that is a lesson that I think so many independent media creators, and I raise my hand and include myself in that statement, can draw from. Because I think a lot of the times when you're working on something, you work on it for a while and then you just sort of go, okay, that's it, it's done. And then you just expect people to love you or to revere you or get some great movie deal or whatever, just based on the fact that you decide to bless the world with your presence. And that's not the way it is. And Scott Sigler definitely espouses that attitude of, if I'm going to make something of myself, I have to make something first.
Here's a snippet from an interview I did with Jeffrey Breslau, star of TV, movie, and audiobook. He gives some great pointers on voice acting and characterization. This interview was done at StellarCon 2005.
Do you feel that there are certain voice types that are bases for nearly every character?
Well, there are certain character bases, character ground zeros, as it were, where everything comes out of a certain amount of the bases. Like, for instance, one of the basic things in writing is there's only a limited number of original story ideas. Mm. Everything else is just a retelling and a twist of a basic.
Sure.
You know, like there are 26 story ideas and everything else is just a different retelling of one of the basic stories. Same thing with character voices. The character voices are limited by the amount of voices that the human vocal cords can do. Mm-hmm. And everything else is the way that the voice is used. The way that those pitches and timbres and gravelly and whatever decorations you could put on the voice to allow it to do different things would work. You can mix and match. You can take a low voice and give it maybe like a New York accent, and then all of a sudden you got maybe a Wolverine or Nick Fury. Mm-hmm. You know, or you could have that same type of a voice up here, and then all of a sudden you got somebody else, maybe a convict. But still, same accent, but right, different timbre of voice. So you can mix and match, and that's where you get all of the different types of voice. What I do is, very often I'll do the iconic search. If I read a script, and if any line jumps out at me with a certain accent or feel to it, I'll explore that feel. And if it works with the rest of the thing, then I possibly have something. All obviously, if there is a background that the writer gives the actor, all right, this Joe Shigatz comes from Brooklyn and he has a Lower East Side accent and he's grew up as a street kid, you know, if you're getting all of this background information, that narrows it down and you know basically what ballpark you're playing in.
Are there tips for writers to create those characters for the voice people?
Based upon what writers write in their characterizations, very often a writer in creating a story with characters, when the character is strong enough and the writer has done his job by creating backgrounds,
where the character is from, what situations the character has been through, where the character was raised. Usually, the voice will introduce itself into the writer's head. Each character's voice will do that. One of the reasons why I go to these conventions is because I did the audiobook
right.
of Glenda Finkelstein's Edge of the Universe. And the characters are drawn very well, and they're nice, strong characters. And when I was reading the book, their voices in my head just jumped up and introduced themselves. So when a character is strong enough, that's what will happen. As far as ways in which the voice actor can assure that the voice will match the character that is written for this voice is, number one, read anything that you possibly can that the writer has written on the background to the character. Number two, experiment with different ways of saying the same dialogue, different voices. Now, it's almost like a party game where you can do things that are just outrageous. For example, to take a guy at a military base, for example, who's a career soldier, let's say an officer, and let's say you really want to do something that is so off the wall, and let's go with something that is completely unsoldier-like, and then all of a sudden you bring it down like this, and if you really think hard enough, you can come up with something, and maybe it might turn into something like Phil Silvers.
Ah, okay, I see.
So,
but do you feel that bringing something like Phil Silvers in there, do you think that could be violating the stereotype of the character? Because I know in audio, we don't have the visuals. We really have to deal in stereotype sounds for characters.
Yeah, to answer that question, let me go back to Phil Silvers. What is the character's personality? What does the character do? Now, in the case of Phil Silvers, like a Sergeant Bilko, you have here an Army officer. And what does he do? He's a con artist. He's a car salesman, virtually. You know, not really.
Well, if necessary, I'm sure he'd sell you a tank for a pretty good deal.
Absolutely. But he's a wheeler dealer. Mm-hmm. Anything that he could possibly swindle out of you, that's what he'll do. So what kind of a character does that call to mind? Now, if the writers wrote scenes for the whole show where this army soldier was wheeling and dealing people out of their supplies just so that his platoon can have what they need. Now, all right, this character has to be able to wheel and deal. When it comes to audio production, since you do not have visual as a fallback, everything has to be done through the voice. You have to convince the audience that what they are hearing is what they are seeing in their minds, which is through the voice. So, when you're doing anything, you have to establish as quickly as possible the believability of that voice. Yeah. Because if you don't, and you're spending so much time trying to establish believability, the audience is not going to pay attention to what's going on. They're going to try and pay attention to who is this person.
Right.
So instead of confusing the audience by trying to establish who you are, instead of listening to what the story is about, you want to establish immediately who the character is. And then you can take that character and put him in whatever situations. Then the audience is free to follow this character that they have come to know in a millisecond what's happening with him. So basically, there's a lot of stereotypes used. And the stereotypes or familiar vocal qualities that are labeled in the audience's mind can be used to establish as quickly as possible. Now, the problem with that is if it's very famous and if it's very recognizable, unless if you're doing a parody or a special tribute or something, it's not going to work for you as an original thing.
It seems almost distracting.
Yeah.
And then they're going to be listening
labeled,
for,
and then yeah.
They'll listen for problems with the impression as opposed to listening to the performance.
Exactly, and the story. So here's what, and I told this to Sean O'Rourke, another voice actor, when we had a panel at one of these conventions together. If you do great impressions, then great, you could be the next Frank Gorshin or Rich Little. But, and you can do great parlor tricks,
yeah.
But if you do horrible impressions, if you say, here, let me give you an example of an impression, and if you do an impression and nobody knows what the hell you're doing, who the hell that is, then that character is yours. your character. There's an L.A. vocal coach who teaches voiceovers. I don't remember the guy's name. I'll have to look it up. But he had a vocal workshop, and in the vocal workshop, and I learned this from listening to his series, he says, all right, he takes one of his students, and he says, all right, let's say, do Katharine Hepburn, mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of people, you know, and he says, now, whatever you do, don't say a famous Katharine Hepburn line. Mm-hmm. Don't say, like, you are my knight in shining armor. You know, but just read it as if you were Katharine Hepburn. So the student would suddenly start to read, and he obviously cannot do Katharine Hepburn. And he would ask the rest of the class, when the person finished reading, what character do you hear? What occupation would you say this character is?
So you're building the character. Instead of just photocopying somebody,
exactly.
You're really building.
You are building.
That makes sense, because most people that I've spoken to that do impressions, whether voice actor or just amateur, that they always have some base phrase
mm-hmm.
that sets them in the mood, in the mind.
But oh, yeah, that's George Carlin used to do that when he used to do Ed Sullivan. He always used to say that his Ed Sullivan was closer to the John Biner Ed Sullivan as opposed to the Will Jordan Ed Sullivan. And he would say, and he would key in Ed Sullivan's voice by using the phrase, well, now you know. When I know, right here on our show. You know, and he would always, that, and all of a sudden that would key him in to, it's like using the word antipasto to come up with Boris Karloff. Antipasto. It just sort of works. You know, I don't know why it works, but it's just suggestion. Yeah. Once you have, all right, what occupation is this character? Do you see him as short, as tall? Is he round? Is he angular? Does he look like Bunsen Honeydew? Does he look like Ichabod Crane? You know, and each of the students would say, well, he sounds like this and this and this look and this occupation and everything, and from there you got a character. Mm-hmm. So now if this character is in an audio production and they need a voice actor for it, all this voice actor has to do with all of the background types of this character is, as an implement, Katharine Hepburn. So now all he has to do is try and imitate Katharine Hepburn, and he comes up with the character that they want.
Coming soon from Outcast Multimedia. Dun, 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 dun,
we're going to be releasing dun, 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 a mini cast for everybody out there.
Wait, mini cast should be more like Miami Vice.
We're going to be coming out with the Roto mini cast. On the 10th and 20th of every month, you'll be getting a 15 to 20 minute mini episode of Requiem of the Outcast, featuring the latest and greatest of sci-fi and her fandom, as well as a few little surprises from me. If you're interested in finding out more of Mr. Adventure's escapades, you can find him and more at pulpadventures.net. More adventures are being produced as we speak. You'll be able to find out all sorts of new adventures with new villains. New heroes.
Ta-da!
And even possibly a little romance.
Da-na-na-na-na.
That's right. More adventures at pulpadventures.net.
God, we need to get a budget. I'm not even kidding you.
Episodes of Moment of Serenity are currently in production. So we should be expecting at least one episode within the next 3 months.
I got a little slide guitar going in there.
I hear that's good.
Actually, I was pretty proud of that. I feel sad that I'm proud of that.
Okay. That was very nice. So, of course, musical stylings provided by Earl Newton.
Do, do, do.
And, of course, we'll also have a couple videos coming down the pike.
Yes.
With the magic of the interweb, I can harness its power to bring pretty stupid movies to you. Well, we hope you enjoy them.
Recommend the Outcast, brought to you by the Internet. The Internet, networked love since 1997.
and of course, well, Mr. Earl, do you possibly have some things? Yes, coming from Southern Runner Productions or perhaps the Creative Orgasm?
I will be coming out with a special podcast I like to call Moment of Procrastination. I'm getting to it. I don't have time right now, but eventually I'm going to come out with this. And it'll be good.
You have something more concrete planned, sir.
That's right, something more concrete planned. No, let's see. Coming from Southern Runner Productions, we will be coming out with Sins of the Mother here, actually, in the third week of January. Everybody needs to drop by the site, southernrunner.com, and check it out, because we are, indeed, coming out with this film. It's been a long time coming, but I've just talked to a few folks who are going to add on to it in various ways, and it's shocking. In fact, I'm going to give you two websites, okay? You need to check out josephfagan.com, that's josephfagan.com, and you need to check out aaronsapp.com, that's aaronsapp.com. Check out those two sites. Those people are working on my movie. When you see that, you'll be like, oh, this will be something important.
And, of course, once the trailer, you have the trailer out right now, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll go ahead and slip that in the feed as well.
Oh, you are a...
So look Flight. In the feed in the next few weeks or so for the Southern Ronin Productions Sins of the Mother trailer.
By the way, I hadn't even told you this yet, Rich. But,
what's that?
And this hasn't even been updated on the website yet. Butcher of Ballas is out.
Butcher of Ballas? Why, what is that, Earl?
Butcher of Ballas is a comic book written, or really drawn and created by Chasen Grishup, and I wrote it. And it is it's really a fantastic book. I wish I could say it wasn't, but it is. And you should definitely check it out, or as Scott Sigler says, I will kick your ass. See, I learned from Scott. When I was listening, I was like, yes, that's a great way.
Absolutely. And now where can they find that?
They can find that at southernronin.com, or if you prefer, particle9productions.com. There's so many .coms here, something's about to burst.
Is it particle and then the number 9? Or
yes,
N-I-N-E?
particle9productions.com. But don't put the number part. Just it is the. It'll be in the notes. And speaking of independent films, to all independent filmmakers, listen up, because Rich has got some important information you need to know.
Earl, how much did Sins of the Mother cost you, give or take?
Give or take about $800.
$800. Now, what would you say if there was a festival where you could spend only $20 to make your film?
I'd say no.
I would say yes, Earl.
No.
As a matter of fact, yes, Earl, there is one.
Oh.
There is one, Earl.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
The $20 film festival, which was actually created after watching The Grave Escalation of War, which of course is something that you made, Earl. It's a way for people who say that they're filmmakers who maybe haven't made a film yet. They really want to, but they're kind of hung up on the whole idea of, come on, you need a budget. I mean, $800 to make a movie or more, oftentimes more.
Mm.
Well, we think that there are enough creative ideas, and most people can come up with them, or even cheesy ideas, which is actually what we prefer.
That's right.
That cost you no more than $20 to make. It's a way of limiting you, but also freeing you. Basically taking away the excuses of, well, I can't do this, I can't do that. BS.
Free
your mind.
If you
spend no more than $20 mm-hmm. on your film, we want to show it at the $20 Film Festival. Now, the $20 Film Festival is a roving festival, as a matter of fact.
Mm-hmm.
It is going to be making an appearance at Con Carolinas this year, RavenCon, and we are in talks of getting it at StellarCon, which they have expressed quite a bit of interest in it appearing. As well as MobiCon. And the mm-hmm. best thing is that we don't even have to be at the con for it to be brought there.
Mm-hmm.
I will be having an entry into the $20 Film Festival. Do not think that there is a cost to get in. You can spend anywhere from zero, but no more than $20 on your film, but there is no cost for us to be able to show it. We want to promote independent filmmakers. We want to, or amateur filmmakers, we want to make sure that creativity is what abounds, not excuses,
mm-hmm.
not boundaries, not restrictions.
Preach it, brother.
And that you too can be a star. As a matter of fact, the very first time that we did the $20 Film Festival was at Con Carolinas last year. It was so popular that they demanded an encore. We actually ended up having to hijack the video room for everybody who wasn't able to make it to the first one, demanding to see it. And as a matter of fact, we had quite a few repeat viewers from the first showing of the film. So we ended up taking over what was going to be a regular film festival, where they were just going to show some groovy stuff from online, a lot of fan films, whatnot. Well, we basically kicked them out of the room, and we played the $20 Film Festival films again, which, of course, Earl, you had submitted a few. I had submitted a few. We had Anthony Karnowski.
Sean O'Rourke submitted his. The Quiet Ones by Mr. Andrew Karnowski.
Exactly. There were quite a few other films that we had in there, and the best part was everybody had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, these were all films. Anthony Karnowski, he was a guest at the convention and just happened to have a rough cut of his film, and we showed it, and it was phenomenal.
And that's the key, guys, because I've been there. We've all been there. When you're creating things or you're trying to create things, you're going to give yourself so many excuses why you shouldn't, and it's all about fear. You need to get over it. You need to get out. You need to shoot something, and if it sucks, it's okay. It'll be funny then. It'll work. You haven't seen half of my stuff. It all sucks. It's good. You'll enjoy it.
Absolutely, and there is no greater test audience than a bunch of people late night at a convention who have probably already been drinking.
That is the best. There's nothing better for your ego, because drunk people will laugh at anything, especially if you would throw in boobs.
Absolutely.
I meant to say puppies or something. And naturally, it was just like a mental shift. Puppies. And the point is, make something. Send it in. And get better. That's what it's all about.
And, of course, you can find more information as well as email contact information if you go to requiemoftheoutcast.com/$20. That's 20DOLLAR. Or, of course, you can visit our show notes, which will have a link to it there.
And ironically, if you'll look just to... Actually, in order to get to the show notes, you'll first have to go through a link to the $20 Film Festival.
Exactly.
So either way...
Huh?
We specialize this show for the attention deficit, so.
In case you forget what you're forgetting. We've got plenty of other links. Matter of fact, I think that the Amidala monologues are getting updated.
They are.
As well. We're still trying to figure out who's posting. Somebody has a blog on our boards.
And I think it's hilarious.
They just keep posting an in-character of Amidala from Star Wars, and it's such a wacky thing. It was so funny, I had to link it to it on our front page. So, of course, you can find that information either on our front page when you go to requiemoftheoutcast.com, or even when you're in the Roto subsection of the site. We've also got a link on the right-hand side, if you scroll down a little ways, as well as a link to... Actually, I want to play a promo from our friend Davey Beauchamp, who has put together an anthology.
Recently, a major disaster hit the Gulf Coast region of the United States. It is going to take years for them to recover from this. And right now, they could use all the help they can get. So a group of writers came together, with Davey Beauchamp, to create Anthology to Help Benefit, Writers for Relief. This anthology features stories from Larry Niven, Nancy Kress, Brian Aldiss, Joy Haldeman, Gardner Dozois, along with many other exciting writers. Writers for Relief is available for order through all major book chains, as well as your favorite internet bookstores. Its ISBN number is 14-116-582-2. All proceeds from the sale of the book will be donated to the American Red Cross. If you have any further questions about the anthology, you can contact Davey Beauchamp at writersforreliefanthology@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right, folks, convention season is coming up quickly.
That's right. This is the new year, guys. It's a brand new year. There's lots of time to waste time. It seemed to make sense at the time.
Hell of an intro, Earl. PodcasterCon is the first one of the season. That, of course, is January 7th, 2006. Chances are you're downloading this on the 1st of January. So, hey, next weekend. It's coming up quick. It's kind of a local meet and greet in the Chapel Hill area of North Carolina. You can find more about them at podcastercon.org. It is a totally free one-day event. A lot of podcasters are going to be there. A lot of great classes are going to be there also for anything you might want to learn on audio or video podcasting. Also, StellarCon 30 in High Point, North Carolina, which is going on February 17th through the 19th. I think more information can be found at stellarcon.org. Following that is the introduction of RavenCon. It's the very first con. Richmond, Virginia. This is being put on by the guys at Ninth Degree, Tony Ruggiero, and T. Morris. That's Richmond, Virginia, April 21st through the 23rd. I'm going to be at that one as well as StellarCon doing the $20 Film Festival, hopefully, as well as various podcasting and audio panels.
Exactly. Coming up right after that, May 19th to the 21st, will be MobaCon, which you can see at Mobile, Alabama. Beauchamp will almost definitely be there, as will I. We'll be doing the $20 Film Festival, as well as a number of screenings, most probably Sins of the Mother as well. If you guys are in the Mobile area, you should really get down there because it's a terrific, I don't want to say a family-oriented con, although everyone is a family there. Little bit adult, but if you enjoy getting out, hanging with your friends, it's a great con. It's just a very relaxing atmosphere. Coming up after that is Balticon, which I'm almost certain T. Morris will be at this year. But more important than T. Morris, Neil Gaiman will be at this con. Yes, I know. I'm going to see if I can't get an interview from her, because I know she's a huge Neil Gaiman fan. Or she might be there. I don't know. I'll see if she's, like, wafting in on the little Neil Gaiman waves. But I definitely will be there and probably showing my film as well if they accept it. I don't want to say they will, but the odds are looking pretty good that I'll get in there. So you guys should come and check out Sins, come out and check out Neil Gaiman, and come and check out me trying to check out Neil Gaiman. There's a plentiful things to do at Balticon.
And, of course, Con Carolina is Charlotte, North Carolina, June 2nd through the 4th. That is the Requiem of the Outcast home convention.
Oh, and it's going to be beautiful.
Audio panels, $20 film festival, and a lot of fun galore.
Yeah, just basically acting insane. If you come early, you can get in with us and we'll all go make fun of the gamers together.
Absolutely. Well, which did warrant an apology at one point in time, excellently written by you, sir.
That's right. But if you can check all of that out at recommendtheoutcast.com.
And, of course, the website for them is concarolinas.org. And, of course, rounding everything out is Trinicon in Raleigh, North Carolina, July 21st through the 23rd. That is a convention that is really fun to hang out at. Davey,
well
Sean, Davey Beauchamp, Sean O'Rourke, and I, well, we make our own special breed of fun there. And, of course, you can go to the website, recommendoutcast.com, where we have a link to our Frapper map. If you don't know what a Frapper map is, that is basically a hack or a mod of Google Maps where you can kind of put a push pin in wherever you are located. We've got quite a few folks on there from Arizona to Australia, even that little island, Tasmania. And as a matter of fact, we also have a listing of all of our conventions appearances that listed on that map. And you will be able to, so basically you can see where we're going to be at and maybe come on out, see if you can track us down. Most likely we'll either have a Southern Ronin or a Requiem of the Outcast shirt on. I think it might be trying to put together some Mr. Adventure shirts soon.
Uh-oh.
For that particular side of my productions.
We're moving on up to the east side.
To that deluxe apartment in the sky.
Hi.
All right, folks, I think on that note, we need to wrap up this episode. This has been episode 27 of Requiem of the Outcast. Thank you very much for listening and downloading.
I would like to say, very quickly, I hope you enjoy that we didn't speak too loudly for you, because for those of you that are hungover from your New Year's parties, take an aspirin, you'll be all right. Happy New Year, and guys, we have so much to look forward to in the coming days.
Look for the mini-casts coming down the pipe, as well as some videos, Moment of Serenity, PulpAdventures.net, and, of course, Sins of the Mother.
Woohoo!
Pay attention to our feed. Don't forget our website and our boards. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you have a good month.
Guys, have an excellent one. And remember, this is Requiem of the Outcast, brought to you by the Internet. The Internet. Created by the Army, propagated by the lonely.
That's deep, man. Okay. See you guys on the dark side. You'll be able to find anything and everything in hold on, damn it. I gotta, when you do that, I gotta take my earpiece out because that's distracting the crap out of me.
Is it really? wait, okay, we'll start again. We'll take two, okay, ready?
Okay, I'm gonna pull my earbud out so that way it doesn't distract me too much, okay? All right.
That's hilarious that you have to do that.
Okay, ready? All right.
Okay.